You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN 91.9 FM. I'm Skylar Butenchin.
I'm Katie Frankowitz. Six people were detained by federal immigration enforcement officers in Clatsop County over the weekend. One of those people has since been allowed to return home, but community members say they do not know the whereabouts of the other five people. It's the first major raid on the North Coast since the Trump administration began ramping up deportation efforts. According to people familiar with the situation, officers with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement pulled people over in the Seaside area beginning early Saturday morning and took them into custody. Jenny Poole Radway, executive director of the Astoria-based nonprofit Consejo Hispano, said all of the people detained were on their way to work. In a statement, Poole Radway condemned the, quote, aggressive and unwarranted tactics that target immigrant communities. She says it undermines public trust, destabilizes families and the entire community, and violates principles of dignity and justice. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has not responded to a request for more information and comment. I'm Katie Frankowitz, reporting for KMUN.
Election results held in Pacific County, Washington, where challengers are on a path to oust incumbents in several key races. Election officials released updated numbers on Friday after counting most of the remaining ballots following the November 4th election. In the race for mayor of Ilwaco, Eddie Hillard beat incumbent Mike Casinelli with 76% of the vote. Casinelli had been seeking his fourth term as mayor. In the race for the District 3 commissioner seat on the Port of Ilwaco, longtime Commissioner Butch Smith held only 30% of the vote. His challenger, former Ilwaco Port Manager Guy Glenn Jr., continues to have the lead with 68% of the vote. At the troubled Port of Peninsula, where port management has faced scrutiny by the state, challenger John Oakes is still winning the Commissioner District 1 seat with 71% of the vote. Incumbent Bill Darien trails with only 27% of the vote. School board races were tighter. Carolyn Perez, who was appointed to the Ocean Beach School District Board of Directors in early 2024, won her seat and will serve out the remaining 2 years of the seat's original four-year term. She led with 54% of the vote. Challenger Joan Porter was close behind with 45% of the vote. The other two board members with the Ocean Beach School District, who were up for election, did not seek another term. In the race for the seat representing the Long Beach and Seaview area, Eric Svensson led with 62% of the vote, while Samantha Hernandez-Ortega trailed with 37%. In the race for the seat representing the Ilwaco and Chinook area, Faith Forster led with 53% of the vote. Marianne Murray had 45%. Overall voter turnout was at 41%, and more than 7,000 ballots have been counted. An additional 350 ballots still remain and will be counted on November 12th. Pacific County must certify the election results by November 25th. Some information in this story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek said on Sunday that Oregonians will still be able to use food assistance, or SNAP, benefits they received last week. The assurance comes amid a legal battle between states and the Trump administration over an anti-hunger program serving 42 million Americans. On Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court stayed rulings ordering the Trump administration to pay out the benefits. The administration then demanded states undo payments made last week. Kotek pledged to fight the demand, quote, every step of the way, end quote. The governor assured Oregonians they could still use the SNAP dollars loaded on their EBT cards. More than 750,000 Oregonians are currently enrolled in SNAP. This summer, the Trump administration eliminated funding that helps children from migrant families attend college. From KUOW and Northwest Public Broadcasting, Ann Dorfield and Renee Diaz look at what that means for Washington State students in the latest story in a series from the Northwest News Network.
Citlali Mendoza's parents are migrant farm workers from Mexico. They help grow and pick apples in central Washington.
If my mom would have been able to finish her education, she would have definitely been an elementary teacher. That's what she dreamed of. And then I think of my dad, and his biggest like dream when it came to education was going to school, finishing, and becoming an architect or an engineer.
They push Mendoza and her brothers to work hard in school so they could have those kinds of opportunities. Mendoza prided herself in her grades, but she hadn't thought much about life after high school until a teacher encouraged her to consider the University of Washington. It felt like a long shot. It's selective, and she didn't know anyone who'd gone to school so far from home.
So I remember just thinking like, oh my gosh, like, wait, is that too crazy though?
Then a recruiter from the UW's College Access Migrant Program, or CAMP, gave a presentation at her school.
Just the mere fact of looking at her and knowing that A, she was from Prosser, which wasn't too far away from where we were, and B, she was a Latina who had also graduated UW, I immediately felt connected to her.
Mendoza says still it was daunting to be the first one in her family to go to college. There was no one to help with financial aid forms and paperwork.
For her to say like, yeah, that's everything that we help you with, that's what really sold me.
Migrant students who got accepted to the UW and the CAMP program got a lot of support in their first year, like a weekly seminar to help them acclimate to college and life in the big city. Until this year, the federal funding UW received allowed it to send CAMP recruiters to agricultural communities across the state.
I'm Renee Diaz reporting from Wenatchee. In the nearby Eastmont School District, college counselor Paola Ortiz saw the benefits of CAMP in local high schools. She says recruiters made students and their families more confident about going away to school, knowing they'd have mentors and peers with similar backgrounds.
They're geared towards supporting these students academically and emotionally, right? Having kind of a home away from home.
CAMP also provided financial support that can be critical for students from families where income can be seasonal.
That's what they're designed for, is to retain these kids and make sure that they finish their first year of college and continue on.
The U.S. Department of Education has found that CAMP students are far more likely to stay in school, but the Trump administration has questioned the effectiveness of migrant education programs and called them extremely costly. This summer, it cut funding for migrant students. Andres Huante is a director at the UW's Office of Minority Affairs and Diversity. He led its CAMP program, which served about 50 students a year. Huante says even after migrant students are accepted to the UW, they often doubt themselves.
It's like helping them understand, like, you know, you deserve this. You earned it. You went through the process and the university admissions decided that you would be a successful student here.
Michael Perez grew up in the Yakima Valley and was in the UW's CAMP program in 2018. Perez says it was a cultural shock to move to Seattle, and he might not have finished college without the financial and moral support from CAMP.
They gave that foundational piece that I needed in order for me to be able to access the higher education. They gave me that bridge.
Perez is now preparing to apply for medical school. He says he was shocked to learn that CAMP had lost its federal funding.
If we burn that bridge down, then people don't have the access that they need. And so we're just continuing the cycle of poverty.
Citlali Mendoza says CAMP is the reason she applied to the UW. She won a presidential scholarship and is now a senior looking at grad school for public policy. To her, getting rid of CAMP is bad public policy.
How is me learning more about class registration, financial aid, and job opportunities a harm to you or anyone else?
Mendoza says CAMP may be gone for now, but she'll still volunteer to translate for Spanish-speaking parents on campus tours. I'm Ann Dornfeld in Seattle.
And I'm Renee Diaz in Wenatchee.
Public records requests to the Washington Attorney General's office have doubled in the last decade. As Spokane Public Radio's Owen Henderson reports, the office has a new team to address the demand.
State Attorney General Nick Brown says rising mistrust in the government is partially fueling the increase in requests. Now, he's formed the Public Records and Open Government Unit to improve transparency. Brown says he also wants it to start changing the culture within state and local governments.
Not just being reactive to requests, but being proactive in how we can be more open. I think government has a tendency to sometimes try to limit access, and we just want to shift the framing of that.
The AG's office has also proposed rule changes to make some public records responses faster, like separating requests into simple and complex tracks. Still, this all comes after the state legislature voted this year to require that agencies anonymize whistleblowers and witnesses in investigations. Open government advocates are concerned that the extra burden on local officials could end up eroding public access to information. I'm Owen Henderson, reporting.
In Roseburg, Oregon, an unconventional approach to addressing homelessness is drawing both praise and criticism. Jefferson Public Radio's Jane Vaughn reports.
Under an overpass, 6-foot-tall privacy fencing surrounds a cluster of tents. It's quiet here, except for dogs barking and the dull roar of traffic overhead. A man who calls himself Bear has lived in this homeless camp for 2 years.
We've got a view of the river, so if we want, we can go out there.
There's wooden picnic tables, a collection of tools, and a game table. It's cleaner than most homeless camps I've seen, with trash bins and a shower. There's even a library, Alcoholics Anonymous's The Big Book, and The Hunger Games.
We try to make it feel more like a family thing, you know, like everybody's family. We live really close together. There are times where we do get in on each other's nerves, but, you know, by the end of the day, we got each other's backs.
There are a lot of rules. The camp can have maximum 10 tents, and Bear has been deputized to oversee it as leader. Campers have to sign an agreement when they move in. No drugs or alcohol on site, no fighting, keep your area clean. People who cause trouble have to leave. And everyone is required to work up to 3 hours a day unpaid. As you might have guessed, this isn't your usual homeless camp run by a city or nonprofit. It's owned and operated by Elk Island Trading Group, a landowner that flips blighted real estate.
We knew that we would never be able to do anything with our properties unless we came up with a solution ourselves.
Operations manager Bernie Woodard runs 3 homeless camps like this in Roseburg. Elk Island has been running the camps for 2 years on land it owns or leases. Woodard sees this model as a unique remedy for the city's homelessness problem.
Ultimately, our goal is cleaning up our waterways, our city parks, and our city commercial areas from homelessness.
But there's another goal besides helping the homeless: develop Elk Island's properties, revitalize the downtown, and make money. Woodard has some community support. Many residents see these camps as a much-needed solution. Campers sometimes clean up illegal camps around town. And Woodard says Elk Island spends thousands of dollars each month to run these camps. He began working on them 3 years ago, after Roseburg passed a tent camping resolution. It allows nonprofit, public, and commercial entities to run homeless camps. Mayor Larry Rich says the goal was for churches and nonprofits to do it. But he says Woodard is the only one who's opened a site.
No churches stepped forward. No nonprofits stepped forward. Now Bernie's the one that said, hey, I have some vacant lots, and let's put them there.
The city doesn't operate any campsites. Mayor Rich says that's for 2 reasons. City councilors can't agree on where to put a campsite, and the public is never happy with the suggested location. Councilors have considered and rejected multiple sites. So Woodard's camps are the only authorized ones in town. But not everyone is happy about these camps. In July, I walked across a dry riverbed to Elk Island, which the company owns, and found a group of campers putting in their mandatory work, raking and clearing brush. 3 of them told me Woodard doesn't actually care about his campers and is just doing this for public attention. They wished the camps were managed better and were cleaner. They said they don't feel they have the choice to go somewhere else or they'll get punished for trespassing. In response, Woodard says campers should be more grateful. But the requirement that campers have to work up to 3 hours a day unpaid on Elk Island's properties could be a problem. Eric Tarz with the National Homelessness Law Center calls this arrangement very disturbing.
A program where an individual is offering a place to stay, but with this condition of unpaid labor, that makes it feel much more exploitative than generous.
A representative from the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries says work must be paid no less than minimum wage, and deductions for housing can't result in zero pay. 3 hours of work a day would come out to almost $1,200 a month in Roseburg. The Bureau representative says it's unlikely this situation would qualify as volunteer work, and anyway, a for-profit business mostly can't accept volunteer services. She says anyone who performed this work for Elk Island might be owed wages and can file a complaint with the Bureau. In a statement, Woodard said he sees this as a landlord-tenant arrangement, not an employment relationship. He said no campers have been removed for not working, and paying people would force him to close the camps. In addition, the relationship between Woodard and the city is contentious, especially with Mayor Rich. He thinks that because of Woodard's past dealings with the city, he shouldn't be trusted.
Me personally, in terms of, do I call him a liar? Yeah. Do I call him a fraudster? Yeah. And so some of them call him the snake oil salesman. And so I haven't done that yet. I just call him a fraudster.
Woodard says the city has mismanaged its homelessness crisis and has threatened him. There have also been lawsuits back and forth, one of them ongoing. In a statement to the mayor, the community development director said Woodard isn't a credible developer. He said Woodard likes to create controversy rather than submitting complete applications. He declined to comment further because of pending litigation. There have been some concerns about Elk Island's camps over the years. In 2024, police say one camp resident was presumed drowned after boating out to the island to work on a dock. Woodard claims the three men involved stole the boat and went out there to smoke weed. The police have been called to the camps for things like trespassing, vagrancy, and disorderly conduct. In more than a year and a half, the three camps received a total of 71 calls. That number pales in comparison to the more than 1,000 calls made in the same time period to The Point, a public area where homeless folks camp illegally. Arian Ritalik, who lives at one of the camps, feels secure there.
You get a lot of safety here that you don't get anywhere else. You don't got to worry about your stuff being taken.
Woodard says his model is better than having a nonprofit run the camps.
And if you put nonprofits in charge of something like homelessness, then you're putting the fox in charge of the hen house.
The thing is, as a private company, Elk Island isn't subject to the same rules and requirements that nonprofits are. For instance, Woodard doesn't have any data showing that his camps are actually getting people out of homelessness.
A lot of people have gotten apartments.
One camp leader estimates more than 20 people have gotten housed, but it's hard to get an exact count, Woodard says.
I don't know the number because I don't even keep track of that. My thing is try to get as many people into camps that need a safe place, teach them what we're doing, and keep doing positive things.
Some people think having a private company step in is good. Gene McVeigh, with the healthcare provider Adapt, says he wishes more people would do what Woodard has done.
If Bernie is in a situation to be able to fund that himself, you know, I wish more people had the ability to do it because I think people would do it.
Tars from the National Homelessness Law Center says Woodard's approach is unconventional, but not unheard of. He sees these types of camps as useful, but not a permanent solution.
This shouldn't be the duty of a private citizen or even of charitable organizations. The government has a responsibility to its citizens, to its residents, to make sure that their basic needs are met. And they haven't done that.
The Roseburg City Council recently canceled a deal to buy property for an urban campground. Meanwhile, Woodard's camps are still up and running. I'm Jane Vaughn reporting.
On November 3rd, Grants Pass awarded Elk Island a $1.2 million grant to help address homelessness there, as long as the company is able to secure land. You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org.